Back in my YouTube Z-List celebrity days, I had an ongoing series called 20 Pretty Bad Impressions in 1 Minute. I can link it in the show notes if you want to see how bad these impressions are. The trio of videos features me and a friend, a different one in each video, going back and forth doing quick impressions. And here's a little fun peek behind the curtain. Two of them were filmed here in Austin, while one is a South America production. Wild. Love traveling. In any case, as the name suggests, none of these impressions were particularly good. And in several of them, our impression only worked for a specific line. Sure, my friend could say, "Yo, Mr. White, where's the crystal?" And it sort of passed as Jesse Pinkman, but trying to get a full monologue going, that was a tough ask. Luckily, my guest today is significantly better at impressions. Lauren Lojudice is the author of Inside Melania, What I Know About Melania Trump by Impersonating Her. Beyond her spot-on impression, she's also done a ton of cool stuff in the sketch comedy world and hosts the Misfits Making It podcast, which is just an absolute delight to listen to. We're chatting about what makes for a good character to perform, why asking for audience feedback is so helpful, and the best ways to get better sleep. Also, a bit of housekeeping. This season of Good People, Cool Things is going to end with episode 200 on May 8th, and in this case, it will also be the series finale. Hoo-ah. I'm not disappearing entirely, and I will certainly not be done podcasting. And there are still plenty of ways to keep up with the sort of irreverent curiosity that has kept this show running for 4 years, most notably the Fun Fact Friday newsletter and the Sports Are Dumb podcast. More to come on this, but for now, we've got a wonderful episode to get to. I'm Joey Held, this is Good People, Cool Things, and here's my conversation with Lauren Lojudice. Can you give us your name and your elevator pitch, but also the type of elevator that we're riding on?
Okay. My name is Lauren Lojudice. An elevator pitch would be I create comedy that brings lightness to people in hopes I can bring lightness to people. I'm a comedian. I'm an actor. I'm a writer. And I make it happen. I'm in a sparkly elevator.
I like
with
it.
Comfortable seating.
Now, we're going to go back to your origin story. Was there a certain, whether it was like a comedian or an actor, or even just like a scene or something where you were like, I want to be doing this?
I never thought comedy could be possible for me, honestly, because I walked into a comedy club and I saw this cishet white dude on stage making everyone feel terrible about themselves. And I was like, oh, this is not for me. So I never thought I could do comedy. I went to go see Gary Goldman and I was like, oh my God, like imagine that. And I just, you know, and the other thing is like, you know, I grew up in Queens and like going into the arts was not encouraged or even thought possible. So yeah, it took me a while to like believe in myself enough to do it. And it kind of slowly but surely like chipping away at like, why not? Why not? Why not?
So can you take us back to that first time you did it? What was the scene?
Well, I mean, I was doing lots of different types of performing. You know, I was like, I think it's like the first time I was like, oh, just when getting laughs is the object, it's so fun. When that's the objective. So I was like doing characters like kind of on my own, actually, just online. Because I didn't feel like the sketch scene was it's very insular and like just kind of people hiring each other's friends. It didn't feel like there was like a room to like enter. It was just like people just hiring each other. And then I was doing solo shows. And then I remember I didn't know what to do. I was like, this is just not working, this solo show thing. I just don't want to do it anymore. I hate it. I hate it. And my friend brought me to an open mic and I was like, got on stage live. This was like being able to do comedy live and like, oh, the objective is so easy. If they laugh, it's successful. Because when you do solo shows, you're in the theater world and there, everyone's a two-faced son of a bitch and they're going to tell you like, oh, it's great. And then behind your back, bad Matthew. And the level of success is so subjective. And so I really liked in comedy, it was just easy. So remember my first laugh? I was at this comedy club in the East Village. And I remember just like telling the story and people were laughing. And I was like, oh, I love this.
Did you get laughs at everywhere you expected, or was there something where you're like, I wasn't like, I always find that entertaining. Like, even if I'm just telling a story where I'm like, this isn't particularly funny, but then everyone is laughing at a certain point, and I was like, oh, is this fun?
Yeah, it's I believed the story was amusing, but I wasn't sure where the laughs were.
Yeah. I like it. I like it. Now, you mentioned how you just create a bunch of characters.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the most fun parts of comedy, or writing mm-hmm. in general, is just coming up with yeah. characters, you know, fleshing out their backstories and things like that. So for you, what makes for a good character to perform?
I mean, I think it's, again, this is subjective, because I feel like if the audience laughs, you know who wins. So I think whatever you make do to make people laugh is great, because there is like such a broad spectrum. There's like, you know, so when Will Ferrell does a character, it's not really like the character. I mean, it doesn't really, like, he does an impression, doesn't really like person. It's like him doing it, and he just points out like one trait we find annoying and makes us laugh about it. And then there's like the fully embodied characters like Tracy Ullman. Like, you're not even sure, you know, where the character she begins and ends, and what's supposed to be funny sometimes, because she's just like showing someone's flaws in the most wonderful way.
And speaking of impersonations, you have a best-selling book.
I do.
Inside Melania, What I Know About Melania Trump by Impersonating Her. So, what was something you learned from impersonating her?
She is just as bad as the rest of them. She's, oh my God, she's smart. She like knows how to play the game. And that's what I just, she's just as bad as the rest of them. But she's funny, because she's like behind the scenes and she don't care about nothing. She's just like, I go where I need to go. I go to spa. I come out. He said, you need to come to me on Valentine's Day for this big rally. I say, you can't pay enough to get me there. And so, don't worry. I get my monies when I can. Don't worry about me. I know how to get paid in cash up front.
It's a skill everyone needs, really.
Yeah.
How did you come across this impression? Were you just like, the first time you heard her, you're like, oh, there's something here?
She found me, this biatch. I said, I did a thing, a joke about Melania Trump being miserable but trying on stage. And then someone was like, you got to do an impression. And I was like, let me try. And at the time, I didn't do impressions. I just did original characters. I was like, I can't do that, because I was thinking I had to be exact. I was like, coming too much from like the acting world, where like, no, you have to be exact. You have to like honor the character. And then I love, like, in comedy, it don't matter. Just make them laugh. So I did it, though. And I really tried to be exact. And the first time I did it, I was so scared, but I did it. And people were like, oh, that's great. Really good. You should do more. And I was like, and then I did her at a Halloween show on stage, and it killed. And I was like, this is going to become a thing. Oh, no.
So you didn't want it to become a thing?
No.
Do you have other impressions that you've tried just like that didn't work?
Didn't work. I can't impersonate Ellen. I've tried.
Can we hear it?
I don't even know how to do it. Like, I just did it once for like a tape for an audition. And I was like, this is so bad. I don't know. I just don't really have a take on her. You know, she's just like nothing. You know, if like you don't have an original take, if it's the same old shit. Like, like my Melania, like Lauren, what her name is, was like getting a lot of attention. She was just playing like dumb Melania, but I mean, people were writing for her. She was just playing like dumb Melania who like wasn't into it. But I played Melania as like smart. She wasn't into it, but she was manipulative.
Well, conniving Melania.
Conniving Melania. Yeah. So it's like, if you don't have something original, just save yourself the time.
Have you ever met Melania?
No, but I almost got invited to Mar-a-Lago. I'm working on it. I don't tell anyone.
Would you do the impression in front of her, or feel it out?
Would do it to people at the party and make them laugh, because they'd all be like, oh my God, you're going to get killed. I'm like, oh, don't worry. I kill back. Don't worry. I have my own resources.
I love it. Well, keep us posted on how that goes, because
I will. Oh my God. I'll be excited. All over social media if at like Mar-a-Lago, me getting into Mar-a-Lago. First of all, how do they even let their security such bull? Okay, back up. Their teams are awful, basically, around, like, wherever they go. They tagged me. thinking I was Melania. The White House team tagged me once. Everyone was going nuts in the post. Like, oh my God. It was amazing. It was amazing. So the White House tagged me once. And so like, I'm not thinking that they're going to know that they should not let me in. I should be on the list to never let into Mar-a-Lago.
I don't know where I was reading this, but it was some story about people with the same name as like much worse people in history or something, or like, you know, current, just like terrible people. But these other people have the same name and they're always getting tagged, and like their Twitter bios are like, probably not who you think I am, or, you know, these other types of things. So have you continued getting rogue tweets since that, or because it was just a one-off, not as much?
I'm on Instagram. I had @FLOTUSOfficial, and I still do. The account's there. I'm just not really posting it. I know it's great, FLOTUS Official. And then what I did is I bought all, like, I got all of them, like, @FLOTUSOfficial, FLOTUS-Official, FLOTUS-Official, FLOTUSOfficial-. I like.
Way to do it. It's the way to do it.
Way to do it. I was like, I am roping this off so now I can get it.
What's the offer that you'd take then? How much cash they got to put on the table to secure that if they want to?
I'd take $3 million.
Okay. I like it. We will put that in bold in the show.
Yeah, now. Put it in bold. I have an offer, Mel.
Something else I enjoyed in your bio is a line that you downplay everything good that's ever happened to you. So I'm going to put you on the spot here. Can you upplay something bad that's happened to you?
Oh, I love it. I'll play something bad. Oh, sure. I'll say something because I have those fresh in my mind. I have the Rolodex playing 24/7, the tunes, the greatest hits. I mean, really bad. This is Melania. This is a good one. I bombed so hard as Melania in front of a crowd of rich white Republicans. It was so painful. There were like younger people there who like got what was happening. They were like watching the like rich white people be really uncomfortable, and they were laughing so hard about how bad it was going. When I like finished, you could hear the clap clap of my heels as I walked up. I was so upset. But I would say the headliner came up to me and it was like, this is the upplay. He was like, what you're doing is so different. Keep doing it.
Ah, amazing. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
And in a similar vein, I guess, I always like to ask performers about their worst gig. But since you've also been on a number of shows and you know, have a lot of acting experience as well, you can take it whatever way. If maybe that was the worst gig, what's like your worst on-set story?
On-set story, this filmmaker wasn't as serious as I thought he was. And I took this gig. This was quite a long time ago. And I just felt like it was a disorganized set. And I hated the person I had to act against. He was playing my husband. Luckily, I had to kill him in the movie. And so I let loose. I was just like letting those feelings bubble up, but like stuffing them down, you know, like the way someone would who's about to kill someone. And it was great. It was one of my best acting experiences. It was good. It was on my reel for a while. It was nice.
What was the method of killing?
I think I stabbed him.
Nice.
It was great.
That seems like a good, like, bubble. I don't know. There's like something extra vengeful about it, almost. That it's like,
yeah,
and you usually have to
do
it more than once. Like,
yeah, doing it with your own hands. Fucking getting in there.
Yeah.
It was great.
I sliced my, I don't know how well it'll show on here, but I sliced the like webbing of my fingers on a can of dog food.
Huh?
Which, like, what a terrible.
Yeah.
That's not a good injury story. That's awful.
That hurts.
Yeah. It's just a lot of blood and an awkward place to put a Band-Aid.
Total.
All right. A question I always like to ask is a question you wish you were asked more frequently. So what do you want people to feel?
Yeah. So what do I want people to feel? First of all, I wish more people would think about this because like I'm obsessed. I'm obsessed with how people feel when they leave my show. I want to know. What was good? What can we do better? And I, every time, like I have this room in New York and so this is where I can show, like this is in, I've had the opportunity to develop a comedy room in New York called the Capiche Club Misfit Comedy Space. And it's enabled me to iterate and get better every time. Our motto is just kind of like, just make one thing better every time. And so you have 2 years of shows and all of a sudden you're getting pretty darn good. and so, you know, we've had a lot of disasters happen, and you just got to kind of like think ahead so that doesn't happen again. And so I want them to feel seen and heard and understood and valued. And I want people to feel like they're enough when they leave. Like, they want them to feel open and light and happy just for that moment, because shit's so hard. And I, right now, and kind of always. And so I want to give them a reprieve from that. Yeah. And that goes into the music choices, the format of the show, who I book, how I open the show, the format of the show, how we arrange the tables, the background, the raffle prizes, like everything.
Have you ever done exit polls on?
Yeah, I do. I put my phone, and I wish more people would do this. I take my phone and I put it on voice record, and I go around and I ask people how would they describe the show to a friend.
What's one of your favorite descriptions that someone's left?
I think my favorite would be like, which I use this a lot, like, I feel like I belong here.
That's very nice. As opposed to, I hated every minute of this.
Yeah. This was awful. I feel terrible at myself. Go fuck you and that other comedian who told my wife, blah, blah, blah. No, we don't do that.
I was in a good mood before I came here.
Yeah. And now you made me hate life.
You have ruined it. Yeah. Always love that. Is there anything in 2024 that you haven't done, whether it's on stage or a role or something? We're big believers, and this is really just guests kind of doing it on their own, of like speaking things into existence. Was there anything where you're like, let's make it happen this year?
Let's do it. So a few things I want to happen. I want to go to Edinburgh Comedy Festival. So we're going to manifest this together. I want to bring an hour of comedy. I've never done an hour. I've done an hour solo show, but I want to do an hour of like just stand up for an hour, do it. And I want to go and bring my variety show there. And I want to do a tour, a leg in the spring and a leg in the fall that is fiscally successful, because that means people came and enjoyed it. And also, I want to bigger media role on television this year. Let's make it happen, because I feel like I want to get something that's like a beacon for all the misfits, like, and that's a good beacon, like it's a lighthouse, and then they go look me up and they're like, oh my god, someone else weird. So
is there a particular show or just anyone that provides a beacon?
I'm open, because I could even be like the weird cousin on The Crown, you know, like, but that's over now. But like, you know, like I could have been like, you know, the misfit cousin in the back, or the weird cockney chick in the, you know, whatever, with like a few lines, it helps.
Can you do a good cockney?
Cockney accent, really do not. They wouldn't let me. They would never let an American do that. Anyway, but something like, I'm just saying, like on a period drama, I could be like the wacky neighbor in period talk, you know, just like, hello.
I like it. I was at a bar with a bar restaurant. We were sitting at the bar with a friend, and she was talking about Love Island. And then our bartender walked over and she's like, I don't mean to eavesdrop, but I heard you talking about Love Island, and just talked for 5 minutes about how much she loved the show. I haven't seen the show, so I had nothing to contribute, but I was just nodding. And then she said she did a great British accent. And we were like, of course we have to hear it. And it was real good. I was convinced.
I do a good Sloan Ranger accent. I've studied a bit about being Princess Diana, because I have a Princess Diana impression. And so I worked very hard on it. I did a little bit of video of, first of all, Lauren discovered that she's related to me distantly or hypothetically. We don't know exactly, but according to a website, it says that she is related to me. Isn't that exciting? And so I did a little stand-up. Would you like to hear a stand-up joke?
I'd love it.
Okay. So the Queen's pussy was so dry, in order to fit 4 kids through, she needed so much oil, we had to invade Iraq. So, anyway, I work on it.
I would also love like a series of lullabies read in that voice. That was so soothing.
Oh, excuse me. That's much maybe. Yeah, so I could do my little, because she talks a pillow talk. She talks very like that. So people have to come to her.
Yes. All right, Lauren, you're almost off the hook here. But we always like to wrap up with a top three. And as someone who is, I don't know, 9 years behind on sleep, I'm very excited to hear this. Your top three ways to get better sleep.
Okay. I'm obsessed with sleep. My dad has major sleep problems. So I made him go to the sleep doctor, really like top best in the country sleep doctor, who gave us all sorts of tips that he doesn't follow, but I do. So thanks. You know, like, I'm so grateful. Okay. One, try to give yourself, like, you're like a child. Just imagine yourself. You're five. So 5 year olds need, they go to sleep. You know, when parents freak out, they're like, we got to get home. We got to get in sleep. You know, that treat yourself like that. I go to sleep at 11 and I get up at 7. Just, you have to try to, and not everyone needs 8 hours, but whatever hours you need, give yourself that. Try to give yourself a regular sleep time every night. What I do, I have a lot of shows. So I'll come, I have, I'll bring like a little thermos with like lavender tea, and I start drinking it once I get off stage with some ashwagandha, also recommended. And so I'll have like lavender, ashwagandha, and then I put on blue light glasses. That's my third tip. Blue light glasses. As soon as you're ready to start cooling down, I put them. Some people put them when the sun goes down. I put them when I'm starting to cool down. I want to just take out that light, just show my brain like, this is, we're going to sleep now.
I love it. I'm going to try all of these things. And
let me know how it goes.
Let's hope it works.
Okay.
Yeah. When I am able to go to sleep, like, I feel like I wake up around the same time every day. So when I can consistently go to bed at the same time, it is wild how that works, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like our bodies need consistency. Who would have guessed?
Yeah, who knew?
Well, Lauren, this was fantastic. I know you've got a lot going on. So if people want to learn more about you, where can they find you?
The best way to go is on my website, laurenlogi.com. I'm Lauren Logi everywhere. You can find me on Instagram, all the things. But the best way is to go to my website, laurenlogi.com, and hang there. Join my email list. That's always the best way to stay in touch with me, because algorithms will keep us apart.
That is very true. Very true. Those rude algorithms. And I just, while you were saying that, it reminded me of, it's maybe pronounced Logitech, but I think it's spelled the same as Logi. So maybe there's a partnership. Get with those joysticks. Maybe you can play
Logitech.
Play a game on stage in your bedtime voice.
I love it. Can we just put Lauren, instead of Joe Parra, Lauren Logi put you to sleep?
Yes. It's the perfect spinoff. I love
there
it.
There we go.
Well, this joke is not as good as the one you told, but we always like to wrap up with a corny joke.
Okay, let's do it.
So mine, what do you call a fish with no eyes?
What?
Get after it today, people.
Good People Cool Things is produced in Austin, Texas. If you were a fan of this episode, go ahead and hit that follow button. That helps more people hear the show. You can send me a message, joey@goodpeoplecoolthings.com. Thank you to all of the guests who have been on Good People Cool Things. You can check out all the old episodes via goodpeoplecoolthings.com. As always, thank you for listening, and have a wonderful day.